As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Vivendi paid Liberty Media $775 million to settle claims related to a dispute that arose from a 2001 transaction. As a result of the settlement, all appeals have been dismissed. Nissan Motor will acquire up to $3.5 billion of stock to enhance return to shareholders. And Alibaba Group Holding is in discussion with banks for a loan of as much as $4 billion to fund expansion plans, which could include acquisitions, according to the Wall Street Journal, which cited people familiar with the matter. Futures higher this morning. S&P E-mini futures up 8 points. Dow E-mini futures up 65. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 22. The DAX in Germany's up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32. The yield 1.73%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 28 cents to $33.35 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed, down 80 cents to $12.38 an ounce. The euro, $1.1024. The yen, 112.86. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen Moscow, thank you very much. We're talking with Sasan Garamani. He's the founder and CEO of SGH Macro Advisors. We're talking about what to expect out of the G20 meeting. The G20, obviously, they are meeting in Shanghai today, have a lot to talk about, things going on around the world. I want to touch on some of those. We were just talking a little bit with Bob Hormats about the elections underway in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to be anything that changes the geopolitical calculation at all, or is this just sort of an interim step out there?
It changes things on the margins, I think. You know, the elections are not to be confused with the presidential elections, which are sort of a much bigger deal, the ones that, you know, started the whole Green Revolution and the failed Green Revolution and put in Khatami and Ahmadinejad during his time and then eventually now Rouhani. These are elections for parliament and for the assembly of experts. Parliament, the Iranian Majlis, is, you know, it's I wouldn't call it a rubber stamp. It has some power, but it doesn't really have that much power. So, you know, it and then one key thing I think that I'd like to point out about these elections is that people a lot of times view Iran, you know, from the prism of, you know, hardliners versus moderates, and which is sort of right, correct. But the relationship that the current president has, Rouhani, with Khamenei, with the hardliners, yeah, is not as polarized as it was during Khatami's time. You know, both the Khamenei has moved to the middle, and Rouhani is not quite as liberal.
Help me with this, because we have such respect for your heritage and for your knowledge of Persia. The basic idea of a 32-year-old engineer in Tehran, and they're not building nuclear arms or whatever, they're doing whatever they're doing, do they have a linkage with their government? Or are the people, a 32-year-old engineer in Tehran, male, female, I don't care, do they have a linkage with the elites in the government?
Well, you know, there is a whole sort of class in Iran of people who do a lot of business, a middle class that is very involved with some of the foundations, for example, and with the Revolutionary Guards and so on. So there are, you know, some industries and some sectors. If you're in big business, you sort of have to deal with the government. But to your question, not so much, you know, and I think this is, you know, it's Iran is somewhere mixed between an autocratic and a totalitarian society. It's more towards autocratic, where, you know, for most of the people, you know, I think there's a relatively except for on social issues, you know, with the chador and hijab and things like that. It's a relatively laissez-faire type of environment for the middle class. If you're in the lower class, it's different. There's a lot of subsidies and so on. And in the very top, it's different as well, you know, but not so much for the middle class.
Are there going to be investment opportunities, serious investment opportunities in Iran in the near future?
Yes, there are. And then, you know, you have European companies are already lined up. People traditionally think of it as, you know, an oil and gas industry, which is obviously the big industry in Iran. One thing important that has changed in Iran now as opposed to in the past is that Rouhani is legitimately trying to change some of the regulations surrounding foreign investment and somewhat successfully. They used to have very onerous restrictions as far as, you know, who could invest. So the Iranians are doing their bit to try to attract foreign investment at this point. They sort of scare people off. There's a couple people still in jail and so on, which is unfortunate. And, you know, so it's kind of a damper on some of the more positive sentiment. The issue right now is mostly with the U.S. And the fact that there are still concerns with dollar transactions, and some of the sanctions have not been lifted. And so for U.S. business, it's still hard, but I think that should change over time. So Iran is trying to, you know, circumvent that through barter, through dealing with the euro, you know, and things like that.
Well,
it's at the disadvantage of U.S. companies.
To our national audience, coast to coast, Washington, Boston, San Francisco, New York, everybody on Sirius and XM Channel 119 as well, can American companies get any kind of fair shake doing business with the new Iran? Or do they have to set up a shadow company in Germany, name it something else, to get any business done?
Yeah, well, I think that the officially, there's not a need to set up shadow companies and so on anymore. I think there has been, you know, some opening in not a complete opening. There's, they call them the OFAC restrictions are, you know, still in place to a large extent. So the bigger issue is a pragmatic one and a practical one. And the fact is that I think a lot of the banks and the banking system is concerned because, you know, they're concerned that the rules might change on them. This is the biggest problem. In that, you know, you have had, you know, some banks that transactions with Iran, and then, you know, they were subsequently prosecuted. And then you have presidential candidates who are saying we're going to, you know, rip up the deal, you know, the day one, the nuclear deal with Iran, day one that we start. So I think that's what's being, you know, the fear that things could, especially on the banking side, could reverse is sort of the big impediment right now. Hopefully we'll have more clarity on that after the elections, and, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Let me shift gears here and ask you about Brexit. It's, as one writer put it this morning, possibly going to be as significant as all the other issues like China and oil before the end of the year. Do you agree?
I maybe not as significant. Yes, it is a significant issue. Let me put it this way. And one of the issues is that, you know, the polls currently show the in vote or the stay vote, you know, they're called both things, stay with the EU, has a lead. I think the betting right now on the street is kind of 70%. You know, these UK betting shops, which people follow this, you know, where the retail money, so to speak, is going.
The United Kingdom has betting shops?
Shocked. Shocking, shocking.
Just shocked.
And they do better than some of the traders, I have to say.
Yeah, thank you.
So people pay close attention to that. The problem is that and we think actually that Cameron got some relatively reasonable concessions out of the EU, but they're hard to explain. They're sort of technical, and this is such an emotional issue, and he's being blasted, you know, by what will typically be Tory friendly press has come back and criticized him on the deal. And so, yeah, I think this thing might narrow, you know, before it widens. And it could end up being like, if you remember the Scottish referendum, that kind of got really close. And then, you know, ultimately we think, yeah, probably they're going to stay in. The odds are that they don't, you know, leave the EU. But, it's going to tighten before, you know, I think there's more comfort.
What's the biggest concern your clients have right now?
The three concerns, if I can say that, are really China, Fed, and oil and energy policy. If you want to, a biggest concern, one single overarching concern, I think, is the what we're talking about earlier, is the narrative that that monetary and fiscal policy is having less and less impact. So you're getting diminishing returns from policymaker action. And so I think there's concern about that, frankly. And not just diminishing return, but sometimes maybe even, a negative reaction. So you're getting a lot of stories about, was the Bank of Japan wrong to cut, rates, the deposit rates in the negative territory? Is that having, what's the cost benefit of that at this point? Are you, hurting the banks more, taxing the banks and so on, and creating a negative disinflationary sentiment and cycle rather than actually sort of stimulating the economy? So I think if there's one big overarching concern, it's really that. It's some sort of the power of the powers to be, so to speak. Can China actually manage, a soft landing? Mm-hmm. These are things that people are concerned about.
Sasan, thank you so much. Sasan Garamani, SGH Macro Advisors, a little bit of G20 feel there as well. Mike, I've never seen this. I see it now. Our good colleague in financial and economic crime, Greg Ipp, a wonderful journalist, was out on Twitter. Do you know who retweeted him? I think
whom?
One N.R. Kacharlakota.
Well, he's a private citizen now.
He's a private citizen, the former president of the Minneapolis Fed. Was it fair to say, Mike, he was a dot descended?
he was
like the outlier lower dot.
Yeah.
Kacharlakota out on Twitter. It's a nerd fest. That's very cool. Good to see you. I believe I'll have to follow the former president of the Minneapolis Fed. We will follow with another hour of your Bloomberg surveillance.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.